Hello and welcome to Radio at the Flux.tv. My name is Ryan Ritchie. I am the producer of The Flux, and I will be the host of Radio at the Flux.tv. Now, some of you are probably listening to this podcast, and maybe you're not familiar with the site, so I just wanted to take a moment to talk a little bit about what The Flux is. That sounds great. And what we're going to be doing on this podcast. First of all, the Flux.tv is an internet site where basically we're bringing filmmakers, independent and student filmmakers, together with film fans and film viewers. So each week we feature one short film from a student filmmaker or an independent filmmaker. We do interviews, segments, how-to, tech corner information, all of that good stuff. And we'll be bringing a little bit of that here to the podcast as well. But here on the podcast, we're going to take a more general look at things like technology, pop culture, and media creation, which should be interesting, we hope, to content producers of all shapes and sizes, as it were. I'm joined now by our resident tech pundit, Patrick Layden.
Hi, Ryan.
Patrick, welcome.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
It's great to get our first podcast out. It's really exciting.
It's been a long time coming.
So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about production news and what's going on. An interesting announcement was made last month by CVS Drugstore, of all people.
Right.
I wouldn't have thought they would be on our first podcast. But they are now offering a disposable video camera. It's $29.99. You can pick that up at CVS's across the country now. They launched in the Northeast at first. So here's the deal on this camera. You pay $29.99. You get a disposable video camera. It has a 1.4-inch color screen, and then you take it back for what they're calling developing. Essentially, the footage that you shot gets then placed onto a DVD, I guess? Is that the idea?
Correct. It goes onto a DVD, audio, video, bumped onto a disc, and it's yours, and it's your archive. Even though it's on a DVD, it's not what we would consider DVD quality. For those that have been in the digital media biz for a while, it's more akin to a VCD, those CD-ROMs that actually held video, more popular in Asia. Fans of the Hackers were loving the VCD for distributing content. So it's cool, but more like an MPEG-1 for you encoding fans.
And so, as we understand it, though, it'll play back in DVD players, I guess.
Yeah. When they're doing their encoding, they eventually ends up into the DVD format, but when we look at it, you'll say, oh, it looks pretty good. Pretty good for a $29 camera.
Right, right. Well, I'm a little confused by who the market is for this product, but we'll get into that in a moment. But for, you know, video creators, to me, it's kind of reminiscent of when the good folks at Fisher-Price had the Pixel Vision.
PXL, yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Back in the day. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what people create with this new low-res format. And, of course, I'm sure it's only a matter of time before some hackers come up with some clever things to do with this as well.
Well, you're right on target with that, Ryan. Already we're seeing people that have been hacking the still digital cameras very easily, going in there, building USB cables, uploading firmware, and being able to reuse it as a camera. We're going to see that already for the video stores. Already I've seen articles on Make Magazine, which O'Reilly's Hacker Mag. Really interesting stuff coming out, and I think you give it another couple weeks, we're going to be inundated with them, and I have to wonder how CVS is going to respond to that.
Well, the part I don't quite get is, beyond, you know, media creators who are going to use this for their own whims, and that's very much a niche market, and I don't think it's at all what CVS had in mind, I don't quite understand who the market is. I mean, this is marketed for what, people who, you know, go on vacation and suddenly decide their memories are worth videotaping and they didn't have a camera, or, oh, I forgot my still camera that does video. I don't quite get it.
I think the idea is, you think of it from the ability to make a DVD. Even though there have been software and hardware products released in the marketplace that make it very easy to create DVDs of your content, for some people, the computer is still the limiting factor. They don't want a computer to do this. But you tell them, build into this $30 price point, you're going to get this on a DVD, you can put it into a regular player. I think that's what's going to be a selling point for the non-tech people and for people who just don't want to be bothered.
But a lot of behind-the-scenes tech, and for those of us who are media creators, an interesting format to take for a spin, I suppose.
I'd love to see some media creators take it and have a camera they're not afraid to lose.
It's interesting you should mention that, because that was one thing I thought about. You know, maybe those shots, those high-risk shots where you don't want to risk a $3,000, $5,000 camera, okay, good luck getting it to getting the footage to look good enough, but what a great way to experiment and shoot some stuff you couldn't otherwise do.
Exactly.
So again, it's $29.99 from CVS, and then they have a $12.99 processing fee to place that footage onto DVD for you, and of course surf the web to find some tips and tricks you'll be able to use with that camera. One other thing I wanted to talk to you about, Patrick, we had the peer-to-peer rolling from the Supreme Court.
Yeah, the Grokster case.
Yes, and basically what it comes down to is if you're running one of those sites like Grokster or Kazaa, I'm assuming,
right,
you can be held accountable for the use of your network for, you know, the trading of illegal copyrighted material to which you don't own the copyright.
Right. The thing that you got to keep in mind there is people were being singled out because some of these companies are almost promoting the use of the technology for peer-to-peer sharing, calling it the replacement for the original Napster, is how one pundit put it. So in that case, I can see why they narrowed in on these two services, because unlike a BitTorrent, which has legitimate uses outside of the file sharing arena, these particular technologies were nearly unabashedly advertised as a way to get free stuff and take away from the artists.
And now, thanks to the eminent domain rulings, the Supreme Court, someone could come and take your building where you're hosting these servers anyhow. But that's
if they can't get the IP addresses, they'll just take the whole company.
that's a story for another day. One thing, we've got a new technology that's starting to roll out for people who want high-speed access. Of course, broadband, you know, it's changing the internet and has been for the last 3, 4, or 5 years. You were going to tell us about a new fiber optic solution that's coming into homes.
It's exciting because fiber optics have been the backbone ever since AT&T had their You Will commercials. That was going to be
classic.
They're great
stuff. I
love
those.
So what Verizon's rolling out, starting in really East Coast, actually some Texas, some Maryland, and even some Pennsylvania, they're calling it Fios, F-I-O-S. And Fios really is fiber optics in the home. What happens is, when your neighborhood is wired, fiber optics come right to your house, and then there's a little converter box, and it turns your fiber optics into something that can carry over the copper in your house.
Now, why would I want to do this versus, say, you know, broadband DSL or broadband cable? What's the big selling point here?
Well, for DSL and cable, really, it's about the speed. DSL is very distance-dependent. The further you're away from your local switch, the slower you get. Cable really, in most cases, has been winning the speed race, but now this ups the speed race in a whole new way. Let me hit you with some numbers. If you want to get the most basic package right now, 5 megabits down, 2 megabits up, that's $40 a month. Basically, that is what Comcast is offering now for their basic tier.
Okay.
You go to the next level, $50 a month, 15 megabits down, 2 megabits up. That's huge. That's finally saturating the, you know, 10 megabit routers that we have. It's faster. That is amazing speed. And if you want to go nuts, 30 megabits down, 5 megabits up for $200. You and I aren't going to take that. That's more small business kind of stuff. Pretty amazing, though, because the speeds are blowing the doors off of anything else anyone else can provide.
And even if you're not planning on using this fiber optic network, maybe this will finally start to drive down broadband prices. I mean, $40, okay, we're pretty much trained at this point. That's about what you're going to pay for broadband. But, you know, maybe we get that down $15, $20 a month consistently. As content providers, it's going to allow us to, content producers, it's going to allow us to hit some markets that have been previously untapped.
It is pretty amazing. Right now, I pay with my cable company a higher tier speed to get approximately 6 megabits down and less than a megabit up for downloading files, going online for gaming, and just have a snappy internet experience. I would save money staying where I am and going to Fios.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So basically, this is also great right as we hit the rollout of HD content and
right,
HD downloads and so forth, both from QuickTime and also Windows Media on the web. So, you know, in some ways, it feels a lot like we've been here before. There is an angle posting on the Flux.tv, the angles where we post articles that are kind of off-topic a little bit talking about this, and I want to get to this in a moment, but basically it feels a lot like 1997 again. We're going to talk about that a little bit more after the break. You're listening to Radio at theflux.tv. Welcome back to Radio at theflux.tv. I'm Ryan Ritchie. With me, Patrick Layden. And we were talking before the break about fiber optic service to homes
right.
and high speed and broadband. And, you know, it's everywhere now.
Yeah.
Or getting there.
Well, the pervasiveness is definitely kicking up a notch recently.
And it reminds me, back in 1997, you know, there was this whole big push for media on the web. And that was the next big thing, you know, internet movies and all of this stuff. And you know, we were sold on this, and it seems like the key piece was missing, which is high speed and broadband.
Right, and for many Americans and people around the world, it still is missing.
However, Flux viewers already have broadband.
Flux viewers are actually very tech, very hip.
Very hip, absolutely. But in all seriousness, you know, we did some beta tests on the Flux back in 2003, and part of the reason we didn't launch at that time was because there weren't enough people with broadband service, that they weren't going to be able to enjoy the site the way we wanted to. So
you rather, I guess the thing was for you, you wanted to have postcard-sized movies, not postage-stamp movies.
Well, and I got to tell you, honestly, the problem was back then, you had to have postage-stamp for dial-up people. If you ignored dial-up customers, you know, people would come and burn down your e-commerce world, so to speak.
And that's not something you're looking forward to.
Not at all. But here we are, and you know, now broadband's there. There are better codecs, as it were, for the video. We're using H.264 on the Flux.tv. And both streaming, progressive download. And so you really can do a lot more now. And I'm an optimist, Patrick.
I know that about you.
I'm an optimist, and I think we're going to do it this time. You're going to see more video. I mean, CNN.com just recently went back and started adding free clips again after the crazy Real Player, Real Pass thing.
Speaking about that,
yes,
I was recently one of the millions of people worldwide that enjoyed the Live 8 make poverty history shows online, and I was blown away by the streaming quality offered by America Online. It was nearly rock solid. Now, they weren't full screen, but they looked good, they sounded good, and I could watch it. Being a geek, I hooked up my computer up to my television and zoomed in so it filled the screen. It was impressive.
And you were a geek. But in all seriousness, it's interesting because AOL now making a lot of their content available for free. And that was something else that was big back
right.
in 97. So at any rate, if you want to hear more about that, visit the site, theflux.tv, click on The Angle, and you'll see the full article on why it's 1997.
That's not the angel, right?
No, although if you're dyslexic, it could look like the angel.
Interesting.
Now we've offended our dyslexic viewers. That's great. Speaking of the Flux, upcoming episodes. We've got an episode coming up probably sometime in late August, and we're going to feature Dan Lund, who is the director of a little movie called Dream On, Silly Dreamer. Now, Dan is a former animator with the Disney company, and Dream On, Silly Dreamer is a documentary that he shot the day that it was announced that 2D animation was disappearing at Disney, which still boggles our minds and confuses us here.
It's pretty messed up. This is from the Orlando studio, which at one point was really producing content, and then somehow the powers that be decided that the medium was the message in Disney content, and then that 3D content, computer-generated, was more important, even though it's just a different style and a way of storytelling, and you go to dreamonsillydreamer.com, and you get the preview of this film, and you're going to see a lot more on the Flux, and it just breaks your heart if you've ever been into animation.
It's funny because you know, Dan tells a story about how after they were laid off and after the 2D department was shuttered, for those of you who have been to Disney MGM Studios before, there used to be a walkthrough tour of the animation section, and for a while they would tell people that the animators were on vacation. I always thought that was entertaining. No one loses their job at Disney, and no one dies either.
You know, you just throw some people down a utilidor, and you never see them again.
Utilidor. Good reference. So while we're on the subject of Disney, you know, I'm going to go off script, as it were, for a moment. I hate FastPass. For those of you who don't know what this is, when you go to Disney now, there's this thing called FastPass. The whole idea is, hey, who wants to stand in line? So you put your little ticket in, and it gives you this time to come back and enjoy the ride later. Patrick, you're a FastPass user. You know what I'm talking about.
I was at Disney less than a year ago. I was there for a week, and it was my first experience of FastPass. I liked it. Don't hurt me.
That's fine. I only have three problems with FastPass.
One,
I find that it is aesthetically damaging in terms of the actual ugly FastPass stations that are now set up around the park. That's one issue.
Two,
okay, fine. Give me FastPass for Test Track or Mission Death or
hold on a minute.
Or whatever you want to do.
Before you continue,
yes,
it's not fair for you to propagate these wild rumors about Mission Death. The ride's called Mission Space, and it is an excellent simulator ride.
Right.
Only one person has allegedly died on the ride.
Yeah.
The autopsy is underway. It's pending away because they just finished the other big autopsy in Florida. They only have time for one. Jordan Kavanaugh does not work there.
So the point two is they have now extended it to things like Maelstrom at the Norway Pavilion in World Showcase.
Norwegians are renowned for their... I got nothing. Keep going.
I didn't think so. You might as well fast pass Circle Vision 360 at Canada. You know what I'm saying? But anyhow...
They're going to fast pass the restroom soon. What's three? You said 3 points.
Oh, number three is I believe it takes away from the ride experience. You know, part of the rides, the Imagineers, and they do a great job, part of getting you into the character. You see, here's the thing you have to remember. These aren't rides. These are attractions. To me, a ride is something you go, you get on, you get off. And to me, that's what FastPass does. When it's an attraction, when you don't have FastPass, you're there, you enjoy the queue area, you get immersed in what the whole thing is about, and I just think that's lost without it.
I particularly enjoy the screaming kids and the cursing adults in the queue. I'm just saying.
Wow. Okay, well, I'm going to take a moment to get over my FastPass rage. We'll be right back with our DVD Pick of the Week, our interactive Pick of the Week, and tell you a little bit about what's coming up on the next show. You're listening to Radio at TheFlux.tv. Welcome back, everyone, to Radio at TheFlux.tv. I'm Ryan Ritchie. Patrick?
Hi, I'm still Patrick.
He is still Patrick, our tech pundit here on the show. It's that time for our Picks of the Week, our Interactive Pick of the Week, and our DVD Pick of the Week. Patrick, what do you got for us in the land of interactives?
We're calling it Advent Rising. This is a game that's been years in development. It's available for Xbox and Windows-based PCs. It's popcorn, sci-fi kind of game, third-person perspective. What makes it interactive and more than just a game is that, as a subset of games are doing, story is extremely important. Some people call the story a little pulpy, a little sappy. You pick your odd tree reference. I think it's a fun, exciting romp with, at times, cinematic feel. A lot of people are down on the game for some of its flaws. And sure, the game is not perfect. But the moments where you feel like you're wrapped up in an interactive novel with this amazing score by Tommy Tallarico, legend in the game industry for his music, a story co-written by sci-fi author Orson Scott Card. When the times you're into the game, you're into it. I hope that it really becomes a trilogy, as developer Glyphix Games hopes it to become, But when the game works, it works really well. I just wish it worked a little longer. It is still worth checking out. I'm having a lot of fun with it. But hardcore gamers, maybe they shouldn't apply.
Advent Rising?
Advent Rising. You can check it out at adventtrilogy.com. That'll also be in the show notes.
Okay, very good. And that brings us to our DVD pick of the week. And our DVD pick of the week from our Flux reviews this week is a movie called The Dreamers from 2003. Now, Patrick, don't be frightened by its NC-17 rating.
I'm frightened by its NC-17 rating.
Well, don't be. It's a great film from director Bernardo Bertolucci, who has done a film or two in his day.
Right.
And it's set in France. Imagine that. In 1968, during the Paris student riots, and anyone who has a love for independent cinema will get behind this and enjoy it. The ending's a little rough. It only received 3 flux capacitors out of 5 on our rating scale because of the ending, but if you love...
What, did he scream like a big, crazy Darth Vader at the end?
So it's called The Dreamers from 2003. You can read the full review by going to theflux.tv and then go to our review section. Patrick, I think that's all I've got. Do you have anything else for today's show?
Oh, I've got a lot more, but we have to stop sometime.
Thank you for listening, everyone. And if you have any comments, questions, or concerns, you can email us. It's radio@theflux.tv.
The name is the address.
And just a reminder that this week's show is copyright 2005 from The Flux. Do not rebroadcast or retransmit without permission. And you know what? If you email us, we'll probably give you permission. So
yeah, there's very few reasons we wouldn't.
Absolutely. Until next week, I'm Ryan Ritchie, along with
Patrick Layden.
We'll see you at radio@theflux.tv.